Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us in studio today is multi-award-winning singer and performer Dr. Sibongile Khumalo, who has been described as South Africa's First Lady of Song. Her dynamic repertoire includes opera, jazz, choral music, and musical theater, all grounded by the traditional and folk musics of South Africa. Her performances as a soloist and in collaboration with other artists have taken her across the globe. She has received numerous accolades for her stage and recorded work. She is a recipient of the Order of Ikhamanga in Silver, a recipient of the Naledi Theatre Lifetime Achievement Award, and holds three honorary doctorates from Rhodes University, University of South Africa, University of Zululand. Sibongile Khumalo is fundamentally an integral part of the South African music industry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here.
You were born and grew up in Orlando West, Soweto.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your mother, Grace, was a nurse, mm-hmm. and your father, Kabi Mngoma, was a music professor and historian.
Yeah.
Now, along the years, you've been described interchangeably as South Africa's First Lady of Song and the Empress of Song. You are the most celebrated member of a musical dynasty, marked by an extraordinary vocal gene pool and passion for music making. Can you please take us to some of those moments growing up as a child in Soweto, who tried to make sense of understanding the world around her, and what influenced your life's perspective the most?
Okay, where do I start? Yes, indeed, I was born and raised in Soweto, in Orlando West Soweto, born of highly musical parents who were both professionals. My mother was a nurse. My dad initially was a teacher. My elder brother is a cellist, very involved with choral music himself. And interestingly enough, when I grew up, you know, it was a question of, yes, hearing the music that my dad played, but also hearing a lot of the music that my elder brother played, because he was a jazz, what is referred to as a jazz aficionado. So I found myself straddling those worlds. But then I also, without even knowing that that is what I was doing, I found myself listening a lot to radio stations like Springbok Radio, like Radio Zulu, which played a lot of Mbakanga music, Maskandi music, ethnic music, basically, of all kinds. A little bit of the Sotho stations, I suppose. I don't even know what they were called then. But it was, yeah, Radio Bantu.
So it was a full mix of not only
totally
different genres, but also different languages.
Totally. I mean, living in Soweto, there was no way you couldn't be influenced by all those languages. But also, there was a very interesting tradition where you could find yourself listening to, say, the music of Letambulu being played on a Sunday morning while somebody cooked and cleaned their yard and cleaned the outside stoop, and listening to the music of Huma Sigela, listening to the music of the Soul Brothers. Your next door neighbor, there would be a sangoma, perhaps, you know, and the night before, this is during the weekend now, there would have been drumming going on. And somehow, you know, I suppose a child's mind is a sponge, so you absorb all of these sounds. The back opposite neighbor would be having a prayer session with their Zionist church, and I grew up in that kind of space, because indeed our next door neighbor was a sangoma, and our back opposite neighbors were Zionist church people. So it, yeah, and
what
I mean, Zionist,
fascinating way to grow up.
It was a beautiful way to grow up. I didn't know at the time that it was awesome, but indeed when I grew up and I could actually fully appreciate and understand what was going on, I've never been able to say thank you enough for being in that space.
I think diversity is critical, but to have it right there on your doorstep.
Yeah, and up the road, actually up the road, there was a men's hostel, the Dube Hostel, as it was called, and members of the Church of Shembe used to worship there every Saturday afternoon. So even as I hated to be sent to the shops, Saturday afternoons was an okay time to go to the shops, because then you know, I would walk across the road and stand outside the fence there and just listen to this music and watch them do their delicate, ancient, actually, shoe shuffling. You know, it looked like ballet, but almost pre-something, I don't know pre-what, but it was, yeah, it was a fascinating experience and a beautiful exposure, I guess, to a young mind, yeah.
And going through from having grown up in that environment to, I suppose, the middle of your career, you've performed at numerous prestigious venues, including the Royal Festival Hall and Elizabeth Hall at the Barbican Centre in London, the Kennedy Centre in Washington, D.C., the Ravinia Festival in Chicago, the Het Muziek Theater in Amsterdam, Ronnie Scott's in London, as well as, what I think is more important, every major theater and jazz club in South Africa. Because I think often when people become a success, they almost gauge their success on what their international contributions are. They've done the international circuit. But you've also represented in your homage to South Africa.
Yeah.
You've appeared as a guest for all major orchestras on home soil, performed at all major jazz festivals in South Africa. I won't ask you about your outstanding achievements, which I'm sure you've been asked many times before. But what I would like you to share with us is your personal perspective on how you've seen places and crowds change along the years that you've performed.
You know, human nature is human nature. There are so many similarities among people. When people go out to a concert or a festival, firstly, they got there because they want to be entertained. So the wish to be given a quality performance of whatever nature is common amongst all the people. How have they changed? Perhaps you could say they have changed the demographics of a country, perhaps is more represented. You know, just to go back a little, you're talking about having performed in all the major festivals and concert halls of this country. My one big wish still is to travel more on the African continent. I just don't know enough about Africa. Yes, the southern part of this continent, I could safely say I've been there. I've been to Swaziland, to Botswana, I've been to Lesotho, I've been to Zimbabwe, I've been to Mozambique, you know, that kind of thing. So I'd like to create an opportunity for myself somehow to go to all these other places I haven't been to.
And going into those environments, would you consider it more from a musical element, so doing collaborations with local artists of those countries, or as opposed to just as an individual and being able to appreciate and value the
either
cultures
way.
Of those different countries?
Either way. Whichever way it happens, I would hope that I would have an opportunity to share something besides the music. I think there's a common thread amongst all people: to be touched as a human being, to be appreciated as a human being. It sounds like a cliche now, but we all share common humanity, I believe. We all share that sense of oneness. There are certain values, I suppose, that are common also. You know, compassion, a sense of loyalty, that just goes through every race, every country on the planet.
Well, it's a whole sense of humanity that you've described in a nutshell.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something that we should all aspire for.
Absolutely.
Turning back towards the music element, music has always been a huge inspiration to people. Mm-hmm. And occasionally it's been exploited to influence political as well as social agendas around the world. How do you see the role of musicians in that regard?
I will die a happy woman if musicians themselves first start to understand what their role is. Yes, there's the entertainment element, which is an important element. But artists in general, but musicians more specifically, are spiritual beings. That essence of their spirituality is something that musicians need to understand, need to appreciate, need to interrogate a bit more than just singing and making nice sounds, whether it's your voice or through an instrument.
Well, they have such an impact on people's lives.
Yeah. And it's something that not most musicians understand or appreciate. And I think the day musicians come to grips with that is the day that probably we'll find a lot more change in the world than we have at the moment. Everything is used for good and for bad.
Well, music can bring out emotions. People listen to different things when they're feeling a certain way, when they're feeling sad, when they're feeling happy. So it has a tremendous effect.
No, it does. It does. Music has that essence, actually, to it. And so when musicians understand that their work goes beyond just making money as well. You know, they say money is the root of all evil. There's nothing wrong with money. It's how you understand and appreciate and use it. So musicians have a responsibility, I believe, to try and draw out something good in people, something grounding to people. Musicians, artists, generally, musicians particularly, again, are healers as well. So when a musician understands that of himself or herself, you see it in the music that they create, in the music they perform, the music they write for others if they're just songwriters. You hear it even in the chords, the way the music flows and follows each other, the way a melody rises and falls brings out that healing. You hear people say to you, you know, I was so down when I came here, but now I'm feeling so much better. Thank you. That's why I say artists generally, but musicians especially, they have that role, they have that place in our lives. And the day that they understand that, before even understanding what or how society understands or perceives what music does to them, the creators of this music need to understand that themselves first and foremost.
I think that's a very insightful perspective on getting that understanding and realization that musicians are spiritual healers in a way for humanity.
I believe that. I really do believe that. I've seen it with a lot of people I know and a lot of my friends.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Lyra, South African Afro-soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. Today, we're talking to multi-award-winning musician Sibongile Khumalo. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at WomanityTalk. In our previous segment, we were talking about the early days, the cultural influences, the influences of your neighbors on how that shaped your perspectives of music, whether you had sangomas, whether you had the Christian churches. Yeah. It was a whole eclectic mix which influenced your career. And now what I'd like to talk about is moving almost away from your personal journey,
sure,
but the way that you have touched others. And I think that you've been very instrumental in terms of the involvement of different associations and organizations. You're a founding member of the Performers Organization of South Africa, the Association of South African Business Women in Arts. You sit on the board of the Southern African Music Rights Organization and have served on the boards of the National Arts Festival, Grahamstown, and among others, Opera Africa. Does taking an integral part in so many important organizations and associations come with the territory of a person becoming an international performer, or is it something that has grown on you along the years and is part of your identity?
I think it's safe to say that somehow one has gotten involved with these different organizations simply because it became expected that one would contribute something to one's community.
But some people don't.
I know, some people, yeah, I'm a sucker for punishment, I don't know. Some people don't. Now, I guess just seeing, especially my dad, my mom was a nurse and a mother and a housewife, but my father was a big champion of community involvement. He believed very firmly that when you exposed a child to the arts, you're not developing the next big thing in that particular field that they were training in, but you were developing an all-rounded human being who would be a contributor to society, who would be a good citizen, who would be an empathetic person, because say you're in a choir or a dance troupe or whatever other group you're in, of necessity you become sensitive to what other people's needs are, because you have to listen, right? And so coming from that kind of background, I guess I found it an imperative dimension of my life to be part of something so that I can contribute something to that. I guess the thing also is that you have to open your mind to new possibilities, and I guess that's what's being able to join in like that forces you to grow. It forces you to keep an open mind. Being able to say yes to more things than you're saying no to also just says, okay, I've said yes. What am I bringing into the space? What am I bringing? What am I saying? What am I contributing into the space? And it allows you an opportunity to learn. You have to learn. You have to learn.
I am a full supporter of lifelong learning, absolute advocate, and I see it in every dimension. But being able to view all aspects of your industry, to understand how all those intrinsics work, how they fit together, having that broad perspective. Mm. But focusing from an education point of view, as a person who has consciously pursued her academic education and believes that education is a vital tool to empower individuals and societies, you began your musical journey at the age of 8 through the guidance of your dad, who seemed to be so instrumental in your life, Professor of Music Kabi Ngoma. You then obviously you've completed your academic education, you hold music degrees from the University of Zululand and Wits University, as well as a high diploma in personnel management. Mm. You've taught and researched music at the University of Zululand, the Federated Union of Black Arts Academy, at the Madimba Institute of African Music. Do you think that we as a country are doing enough to actually educate the next generation of our citizens, especially women in underprivileged communities?
That's a question that always gets me into trouble because I get so angry. There's a lot of lip service that's paid to the education of our children generally. There's very little arts education in our schools for our children. And I think part of the challenge with that, in particular with regards to arts education, is that arts has been seen as we talk of creative industries now, we don't talk of arts. Because our country is embroiled in so many social issues, right? Every sphere, every aspect of our development, of our education, is linked to social development and how we create jobs for people.
There's an economic aspect.
There's always an economic, yes, there's always an economic impetus to things I do. And that's okay, I suppose. That's necessary.
However, I have to say, though, on what you've said to me in terms of the community involvement, the way that being in a choir forces you to listen to other people, it has that community connection. It's got a bonding effect. And I, until this conversation now, I've never thought of music in that way. I've never thought about that type of connection, which so vividly has come through in the conversation.
Arts education is a life skill. It's about empowering children. It's about equipping children with an ability to do certain things. There are studies, anecdotal evidence of how when 14, 15-year-olds are exposed to music education in this particular instance, they develop a cognitive understanding of so many other things. The critical thing here also that we need to keep in mind, Dr. Malka, is that when a child is taught, say, a song, they have a need to stand on that stage in front of their peers and do well, right? There's no way you're going to stand there and make a fool of yourself. You cannot.
Absolutely.
If you're an actor, if you're a dancer, if you're a painter, you want to be seen to do well. And you go there to do well. And that experience translates to other school subjects. So a child who does well in music will do well in mathematics, will do well in science. I know this. I saw this with my own peers, with the kids I grew up with.
They have confidence.
They have confidence. to go out there, to stand out there and be okay with themselves, with what they're doing. But importantly, they strive for excellence. And that's one of the big benefits of arts education. They understand what it means to be an achiever. They understand also what it means to be a thinker, because you need to find solutions to how to get these results, mm-hmm. right? What we are churning out are not thinkers. We're churning out artisans, and there's nothing wrong with that. The artisans, we need artisans, but not everybody is going to be an artisan. Not everybody thinks that way. Not everybody understands that 1 + 1 = 2. Many of us understand that, yeah, 1 + 1 = 2, but perhaps you can put it differently. You can, instead of putting the numbers parallel to each other, how about you put them at an angle? What does that give you? It's not 2. It's not quite 11. So the mind expands.
You're so right. We've been limited by this linear thinking, totally. Which means that you cannot derive new solutions if you're going through in a blinkered approach.
And that's what arts education does.
Sadly, I think its value has been underestimated.
No, totally. Look, I'm an optimist, an eternal optimist. So I suppose we need to go through this phase of seeing the economic value of the arts in that limited way. And the pendulum will shift and swing to the other side and say, no, but it's not limited to that. Come on, guys, let's remember where we come from. With arts, with being an artistic being, and we go to the other side and we say, okay, can we put them together? And eventually the pendulum will settle in the middle. I'm hopeful that that will happen.
I hope that happens too, to move away from a one-dimensional aspect and have this multi-dimensional aspect.
I'm hoping so. Really, I am.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka Chaka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. Today we're talking to multi-award-winning musician Dr. Sibongile Kumalo. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, picking up on our discussion, in the previous segment, we spoke about the influences of your dad in the music environment, but more importantly, the tremendous effects of art and culture on individuals to have a rounded experience, to improve cognitive ability, and how it impacts on every aspect of their life to create a richer person with multi-dimensions.
Sure.
The next segment of questions I'd like to talk more about from a woman's point of view.
Okay.
Gender equality is something which is tremendously important, and sometimes it touches on sensitive points like culture, religion, and tradition. Do you think that it would be possible to overcome these points for the sake of women's development?
If we understand that we are all here for a purpose, if we all understand we are all here as beings that help each other grow, if we understand that, I can only hope that these inequalities will be overcome. When we talk of gender issues, especially women's issues, perhaps again, the same way as musicians tend not to understand themselves, I think women also have tended to want to be like men. And I suppose there's nothing wrong with that, I guess, I don't know. But I'm too ambitious to want to be like a man. I see myself as a higher being than just being a man.
You're benchmarking yourself against excellence, not against agenda.
Precisely. I couldn't have said it better than that. And so I think that's partly where the problem has been generally. There might be a slight shift now in that a lot more, you know, I've heard people say, I'm too ambitious, I'm much more than a man can be. I've heard people say that, right? Okay. But the thing is, who am I? Do I understand who I am as a woman, what I'm all for? And I guess when we talk a balance, an equality, rather, among the genders, there's a need to present the intrinsic value of each of the genders and understand what those values are. But let's not underestimate the importance of being a woman. The soft side of women has been denigrated for so long that we've tended to want to dismiss it. I believe we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't underestimate that value, because unless we have that, how do we, for an example, how do we raise balanced children? Balanced children between who are raised by a male essence and a female essence, whether it's by two women or by two guys, but there has to be an understanding that everything has to be balanced. Okay, I'm crazy like that perhaps because I'm Libran, it's the scales, maybe, I don't know, but I do believe in finding some kind of balance. You know, when we talk equality, what are we talking about? What do we mean by that, actually? And is that not perhaps where some of the challenges lie? You know, do we understand that that is an area that needs attention?
For me, equality is about having equal access, equal opportunity.
Right.
Because men and women, as you rightly say, we're different. We're not the same.
I believe that, but sometimes, but people look at me kind of strangely. But I'm old-fashioned as well, like that, you know. If you're almost 60, then your thinking sometimes can be like, oh.
But that goes back to lifelong learning. One of the statements that always resonates with me, because I think that we've made tremendous progress from it, and that was been the words of Nelson Mandela when he said, freedom cannot be achieved unless the women have been emancipated from all forms of oppression. All of us take this on board, that the objectives of the Reconstruction and Development Program will not have been realized unless we see in visible, practical terms that the conditions of women in our country have radically changed for the better, and that they have been empowered to intervene in all aspects of life as equals with any other member of society. Mm-hmm. Now, you have performed and sat with Nelson Mandela several times whilst he was still with us. How do you think, given your experience, South Africa will look in 20 or 30 years' time concerning women's rights and gender equality?
If I was a prophet...
You are most welcome to speculate.
If I was a prophet, I guess I would. Yeah, if I was like Credo Mutu, I would try and look into the... What do you call it?
The crystal ball.
The crystal ball or something and try and... and speculate about it. But what I would hope for is that in the same way as we talk of nurturing our girls, our boys don't feel embarrassed by being nurtured, which means that, and the same way as our girls will not feel embarrassed by being empowered, you know, because we tend to look at those terms in different ways.
We gender stereotype.
Right. We empower men, you know. We must give them that sense of confidence and ability to do certain things. And we must nurture our women to be, you know, these soft, cuddly beings. And we should be able to nurture our boys as the same way as we empower our girls. And I would hope that in 20, 30 years' time, that would be a normal state of being as a nation, that our children are raised, we raise our children as people who are able to follow whatever dreams they may have in whatever area they may have. I would hope that in about 20, 30 years, if not before, our education, the content of our education helps our children to think rather than telling them what to think. But not only that, that the content of our education highlights and celebrates what is of Africa. I would hope that if we learn about history, our history, for instance, or philosophy even, would have an aspect, a big part of it would be about, say, what happened in Egypt, in Kemet, for argument's sake. I would hope that we understand that the script, the Egyptian script, would be understood as a very important part of some of the information that we need to glean. That as a country, we would understand or have a better sense, for instance, of what happened on this continent years ago, that the Timbuktu scrolls are appreciated enough for there to not be a debate about whether we should support the restoration of those scripts or not, as an example. You know, things like that. We know a lot about Europe, and that's important. We know a lot about America. That's important. It makes us open-minded people. But we're not open-minded enough because we do not appreciate who we are. You know, South Africans, and I think this is true of many African countries. I'm going to say something that might get me into trouble, but I'll say it anyway. We are probably the only people that venerate and revere other gods other than our own. When you talk of your ancestors...
Are you talking that from a religious context?
I'm talking about a religious context now. We are Christians, we are Muslims, we are Buddhists, we are everything but who we are, really. And we get surprised we are in such trouble. We get surprised because the Muslims go to church every Friday, their men go there and they pray, and you know, the Jews have their Friday gatherings as families, right? And they praise whoever they are praising. And when I have to sit home and have a ritual which involves burning of impepho, which is that incense that goes with my ancestral worship, then there's like that strange raised eyebrow kind of look, including by the very Africans that I think could or should understand what I'm doing. I don't say they must do what I'm doing, but they could at least give me space to do what I need to do. But no, we are the first ones to criticize each other about that. And I'm hoping that in 20, 30 years' time, that will not be the case, that there'll be sufficient space in how we do things where we understand who we are. My hope is just that we should be more African than we are, whatever that means.
Well, I fully support what you're saying, particularly in terms of how we view ourselves. Because often we'll always be comparing ourselves, and maybe it goes back to when we were talking about benchmarking against excellence. We compare ourselves against other countries. We think that aspects in our culture are not good enough, that theirs are better, and we should import theirs into our own. But you're right, we need to start appreciating Africa and Africans for who we are.
Totally.
Now we're coming towards the end of the show. I'd like to ask you a question that I pose to all our guests.
Yes.
Every year in August in South Africa, we celebrate Women's Month. And during that time, we have an opportunity to reflect on struggles that women have gone through, what we've achieved, and where we're going to in the future. So I'd like to ask your opinion of what areas you think we need to build on the most to benefit women in the future.
Well, I think fundamental will always be education. Just strengthen our education system. Strengthen our education, again, based on our understanding of ourselves as a people, of what does being a woman mean, you know, things like that. Because I think a lot of the education that we have is based on a male gendered perspective of what education should be.
True.
And I think if we just focus on aspects that strengthen, I'm not sure if to say empower is the right way, but that strengthen a sense of again, the question of equality and balance comes into play here. How do we make sure that the education that we have takes into account both aspects? And I think also what we may have to be careful of, you know, putting women, or putting anything, in fact, not even women, putting anything on a pedestal can be problematic, because a pedestal is a small space, right? Like any prison is, right? So we have found ourselves imprisoned by this very notion of being a woman, because of the focus that's been given of what it means to be a woman, even before we understand what it means to be a woman. So Women's Month is very important, has been very important, and I think must continue to be important for a while, simply because it puts the woman's agenda, as it were, on the national roster of things that need to be attended to. But what we need to be careful of is, what are those women's issues that really need to be addressed?
I think those are very valuable comments that you've added there.
Thank you.
In closing our discussion, please will you share a few words of inspiration that you would like to impart to women listening to the show on the continent?
What I would like to say is that, as women, yes, let's work towards building each other. Let's work towards supporting each other. But let's not leave our men behind. Let's not leave our men out of the loop, because what we are seeing, I believe, is men pushing back. What we are seeing is men feeling disempowered, neutered in their place, or what they perceive to be their place. And so while it is not our responsibility that they grow, we can always keep the door open for them to come to us for support, for them to come to us to hold their hands, and for them to hold our hands, so that it's, because when you close the door, you're also unable to get out of there. So I'm hoping that as women, we always remember that we have a much, much bigger role, I believe, than just being as good as men or as strong as men. Our role, I believe very firmly, that our role is much bigger than that. Our role is, when you embrace and when you open your heart out and you open your hands out like that, you receive and you're able to give. And there's a lot more than just those jobs or those careers that we think we deserve. We have a lot more to give. Giving off your heart is not an easy thing, and we are better able to do it than most men are. So let's do it without feeling shy about it, without feeling embarrassed about it, without feeling disempowered about it. There's nothing disempowering about it at all.
Thank you for those words of wisdom and advice.
Thank you. I hope it's helpful.
You presented such a balanced perspective of everything, that balance has been a key driver. So thank you very much for participating in the show today.
Thank you for having me.
We would love to hear more from you, especially on your ambitions to pursue more work in the African continent, either as an individual or as a collaborator.
I'm sure you'll hear about it.
We look forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to multi-award-winning musician Dr. Sibongile Khumalo. Tune into the show next week when we talk to multi-award-winning musician Judith Sipuma.